A couple of weeks ago, this person came up to me and was so excited because one of the toddlers in Little Steps and Grace Kids was finally able to be excited about being in there and feel comfortable and stay. They had been coming for a few weeks, and that may not sound like much, but when you work with toddlers every Sunday morning, it is extremely exciting to have them go from being upset about being there to being excited. When I think of celebrating, I think of Stephanie Lardero, and I think about how much dedication and love she has committed to Grace Kids. She's been a part of Grace Kids ever since Hoboken Grace started, so it's been over 5 years. And she loves the kids so much. It is just so awesome to be able to see. It's so awesome to be able to see her be excited with the parents and be excited with the kids about the program. And even when things are going on in her own life, she chooses to come in every Sunday morning and give 110% to the kids. And it does something to her. It does something to her life as well. It brings her joy and helps her to experience God. I love serving with you, Stephanie. Thank you so much for everything that you do for the families and the kids at Hoboken Grace. We love you.
Yeah. Welcome to Hoboken Grace for those of you who are with us for the first time. And today we're celebrating Stephanie's story. If you've been with us for a little while here or over the last couple of months, you know that we've been sharing different people's stories, and we've been having them share their stories mainly on Sunday mornings. And before the conversation starts, you usually get to hear another person's story and what God's doing in their life. But as we step into this new series called Ultimate Fans, we decided to twist it just a little bit. And so what we want to do for the next few weeks is that we want to specifically celebrate someone, and someone who maybe doesn't get celebrated very often, or people don't necessarily know about. They're not on stage. They're not necessarily invisible situations or visible circumstances, and we just want to be able to celebrate them and encourage them. And you kind of see how that fits in with what we're doing and with where we're going. But we're really excited about that. And today we get to celebrate Stephanie and the way that God's used her. And just she's just been an incredible member of our family over the years, and what God's doing in the lives of the little ones who are part of our family and building into them. And so we just want to celebrate them today. If you walked in today and you looked around the room and you thought, maybe I'm at the wrong place because you saw all these different colors and jerseys and things like this, that you're not in the wrong place. You're in the right place. We're just doing something a little bit fun for this series. And you've walked into the beginning of this conversation called Ultimate Fans. So last week we gave people permission to be able to wear whatever it is that they cheer for. And so some people chose sports things. But as I said last week, it's not just a sports thing. I told you, you know, for you tech people, you could wear your Facebook shirt or whatever it is that you're excited about, your Google shirt, right? But it doesn't matter where you are, bands, whatever it is, whatever you're excited about, whatever it is that you cheer for, we invited you to wear that this morning. And some of you took us up on that. I thought it would be something that would bring us together, but then as I walked through the morning, I realized that it's actually ripping us apart. Because Cindy had the audacity to walk on stage with an Ohio State t-shirt, if you didn't notice that earlier, and I'm from Michigan. And so I, you know, kind of threw up in the back of my mouth a little bit. But I'll recover from that. But there's all these little comments that are going back and forth. But we're going to have a lot of fun during this series. One of the things that you'll notice inside your online program today is that you have the opportunity to submit ideas for this location's mascot. Okay, and as we walk through the series, we're going to have a tournament of mascots. And what you think should be the mascot for the downtown location, you can submit anything. All right, and at the end of the series, you get to see the campus pastor here dress up in that costume. All right, so go crazy with it. Okay, right, it's going to be a lot of fun, and each week you'll get to kind of vote through this tournament of what is going to be the final winner as we come to the end of the series. But we're having a lot of fun with this. But I've noticed today that people are a little bit tired. I don't know what it is. I don't know if people just had a really long weekend or what, but I was at the 9:30 service. I thought everybody was just going to fall asleep, and everybody was really down. So the last service, I tried something. It seemed to wake us up a little bit, so I'm going to try it here. And I know not all of you are representing your team or your band or whatever it is that you cheer for, but here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to give you a chance as we get started here to just cheer for whatever it is that you cheer for, okay? Whoever it is that you cheer for. And you can yell out their name if you want, if there's like a slogan that goes along with it. So for me, it'd be like, go Yankees, or I'm a Michigan fan, go Blue. I'm also a Giants fan. It's just been a really bad sports year for me. And every time I turn around, they're losing. Everyone's losing. But whatever it is, you can cheer out that phrase, or you can just cheer, okay? But on the count of three, we're going to cheer for whatever it is that we're a fan of. So I'm going to say 3, 2, 1, and then I'm going to say go. All right, but don't forget, I'm going to say go, because people get confused. It gets awkward. Okay, 3, 2, 1, go. Go Blue! Excellent, excellent. All right, a little bit of energy to get us started this morning and get us moving into this conversation, Ultimate Fans. And usually when we talk about this idea of being a fan, or we talk about fans, we think about it in terms of bands or in terms of sports teams, because I think that's where we usually see it. And that's usually where we reference this idea of being a fan of something. But over the past couple of months, and I guess over the past year or so, more and more I've just become acutely aware of just how much this idea of being a fan and having fans is a part of our culture. I've become aware of just how often we see this showing up, not just in terms of like teams that have large sports fans groups behind them, but then also as it pertains to our individual lives. And I think that social media has kind of exposed something about us, or revealed something about us and our desire and our craving for fans. Because the entire social media experiment is based, it's not really based on friendship, it's based on fans. So when you go on Facebook, you have like 1,000 friends. Right? You wouldn't talk to them if you saw them on the street, some of them. Some of them, you go on Twitter and you have followers. You don't know who they are. Some of them you've never talked to before in your life. And it's interesting, because when you look at what's happening with social media in our culture, I think it's beginning to reveal something to us about us, specifically as it relates to this idea of fans. That there seems to be this drive inside of almost all of us to have fans. And most of our interaction, even on Facebook, is more of a fan interaction than it is a friendship interaction. Sometimes we talk back and forth on Facebook, but most of the time, what do? Oh, I like you. I like that. I like what you're wearing. We're like cheering for weird parts of each other's lives. And then even on Twitter, it's not necessarily so much about the conversation back and forth. Sometimes we see that. People who are good with Twitter do that. But for most of us, it's about retweets, right? Like, I want to be able to say something really, really cool, and then you think it's cool, and you cheer for it by retweeting it. Or you can favorite it. It's this idea of fans. And we have this desire, and I think it's probably always been part of us, but social media has kind of exposed it in us in a really interesting way, or given us an outlet for it, if you will. Because before, you had to actually meet people and get to know them for them to like you, but now you don't have to. You can do it through this unique technology. And it's kind of opened our eyes to something that maybe we didn't realize about ourselves before, that we seem to have this craving for fans, to have people who recognize us, to have people who cheer for us, to have people who like us and encourage us in whatever it is that we're doing or wherever it is that we're moving. You see it in social media. The other place where you really see it is in reality TV. Because reality TV has really taken off because of the fact that we love to have fans. And at first it was about winning a competition, but then people began to realize, no, wait, you can build an incredible fan base and you can become famous for nothing. like for having nothing done nothing significant in your entire life. And people will cheer for you even though they don't really know why they're cheering. And you see people living to develop and build these fan bases. I think that what's happened in our culture recently is kind of exposed something in us. And sometimes that can be a really negative thing. Because sometimes when you see people driven towards this, you see them compromise in order to accomplish it. And so you look at reality TV and you look at what they're doing and you're like, man, like they're literally just making fools of themselves in order to build a fan base. And they go from show to show to show to try to do this. But I think even on a personal level, sometimes we experience this, whether it's Facebook or Twitter. And I know not all of you are necessarily engaged in that, but there's that tendency of, I want people to like what I'm saying, or I want people to retweet what I'm saying. And so maybe I wouldn't necessarily say this in public. Maybe I wouldn't necessarily say this to the person that I'm saying it about. Maybe I wouldn't necessarily be this harsh, but I compromise because I want it to be retweeted. I want people to pay attention to it. And sometimes I think it can lead to destructive things, and that desire can pull us in ways that are destructive. And so I think we may have a tendency to look at it and think, well, it's a bad thing. And I think there's a lot of different reasons why we would look at it and say it's a bad thing. Maybe it's because of how we see it being abused or how we see it leading to compromise in different people's lives. But then also, I think for some of us, we naturally pull away from it. And even as I'm talking about this idea of having fans and how we have this desire to be cheered for, some of you are out there and you're like, not me. Not me. I am a lone wolf. Right? Like you love Green Day music because it's all about that. Right? Like you are your own person. I am an individual. I grew up that way. I'm the product of a Dutch-German family, which basically means we hate people. Very, very individualistic. I grew up in a farm mentality. True story. My grandfather owned his first farm. He owned his own property, farming his own property when he was 12 years old. That is a true story. And I grew up in a culture where it was, man, you make it on your own. Like, you need to forge your own path. When I wasn't married by the time I was 18, my family basically looked at me and said, well, he's probably not going to make it. Probably not going to make it. And I grew up for a lot of my life believing that this desire to have people speak into you was bad. You shouldn't need that. You shouldn't need people. You don't need people. You can make it on your own. You should be able to make it on your own. And I think there's a lot of things that lead to that. Maybe for some of you, you see how it can lead to compromise, and so therefore you move away from it. Or maybe you're like me, your personality, you're just an introvert. So you just naturally move away from people, not necessarily towards people. For some of us, it's not that we don't crave that in our lives, that we don't want that in our lives, but maybe you grew up, and for some of us, we grew up in situations where, rather than being cheered for, we were abused. And so you've just looked at that part of yourself and that craving within you, and you've told yourself that it's a bad thing. Because you never experienced any fulfillment of it. It led you to be vulnerable to the abuse. I think there's a lot of different things that can move us away from this desire to really have people speak into us. A lot of things that can bring us to the point where we begin to believe that it's a negative thing. That this idea of wanting to be cheered for, that this is, it's negative and you have to eliminate it and you have to move past it. But I wonder if that's actually true. What I want to do today is I want to take you to a couple of different passages in Scripture where God talks about this idea of cheering for one another. And as I've begun to interact with God about this, I've begun to wonder if maybe the reason that we crave this, maybe the reason why we so desire this, maybe the reason why we're so attracted to this, why we seem to consistently move towards it, maybe the reason is actually based on how we were created and the dream that God has for you and for me. Maybe it's not bad. Maybe it's just been mishandled. Maybe we're just looking for it to be resolved in the wrong places and in the wrong ways. A couple years ago, I had the opportunity to really dig into what the Bible says about this idea of encouragement. And what I found was actually quite surprising to me. I began the journey because my staff told me that I was really bad at encouraging, which, to be honest with you, I really am. Again, I come from that background, and my family, they weren't about encouraging. It was just like, you need to make it, and they were always pushing. And we were very efficient at moving forward, as all Germans should be, right? And so we were like very, just go, go, go. And so this idea of encouragement, it was never really something that was a part of my experience. My parents were actually better at it than I am. But my staff began to talk to me about this and said, listen, you've really got to get better at encouraging. And so I began to go to God's word and say, well, God, what do you have to say about encouragement? And I started to read through the New Testament, which for those of you who are just beginning to experience this book called the Scriptures, called the Bible, the New Testament, or the letters that are written to the churches following Christ's life. And I began to read through these letters that were written to these churches, and the more that I read, the more surprised I was, because it seemed like every time I turned the page, there was something about encouragement. It seemed that every time I turned the page, there was something about either someone being encouraged or someone encouraging someone else or us being commanded to encourage one another. It was everywhere. Every time I turned around, it was right there. It got to the point where I was so amazed at how frequently I was seeing it that I began to study through the New Testament and really ask, like, how often does God talk to us about this, specifically in comparison to the other things that we're supposed to be and do in one another's lives? Because in the New Testament, you see that we have a lot of roles in one another's lives, a lot of things that Jesus wanted to see happen with this assembly of people that he was bringing together that would eventually be called the church. We're told to pray for one another. We're told to care for one another. We're told to challenge one another. There's all sorts of things that we're to do in one another's lives. And I began to look at, well, okay, how does encouragement stack up against all the rest? And what I found as I came to the end of it is that it wasn't even close. The number one thing that we're called to do in one another's lives is to love. Throughout the New Testament, it's everywhere. It's by far the most dominant thing that we're called to do. But what does that mean? It's kind of vague. Love is kind of out there. It's this big canopy, if you will. And it can mean so many different things. It could be exercised and practiced in so many different ways. But when you get to the more specific things, the thing that amazed me is that, again, it wasn't even close. The second, by far, was encouragement. That is, as God is using these writers to write these letters to the churches, and he's talking to you about, okay, what is it that you do in the lives of one another? What is it that you're going to be doing as you come in contact with one another, as you're on this journey together? The thing that he kept saying and kept referencing to and drawing our attention to over and over and over again is this idea that you're going to encourage one another. You're going to constantly be in this community of encouragement, which made sense to me because that's exactly what I've experienced with church. Right? Isn't that what you experience with church? Like, that's what you think of. You think church, oh, encouraging community. No, not one of us thinks that. But the thing that I saw God saying over and over and over, I just want to take you to a couple passages. We're just going to jump through a couple of these letters. Just a couple of the places where you see this. 2 Corinthians 13, dear brothers and sisters, I close my letter with these last words, be joyful, grow to maturity, encourage each other. 1 Thessalonians, we're going to spend a lot of time in 1 Thessalonians because he talks a lot about encouragement as we walk through this series. 4:18, so encourage each other. 5:14, encourage those who are timid. 1 Timothy 4:13, until I get there, focus on reading the scriptures to the church, encouraging the believers. Hebrews 10, let us not neglect our meeting together, as some people do, but encourage one another. 1 Peter 5:12, he's talking about his purpose of writing to them. He says, my purpose in writing is to encourage you. Letter after letter, page after page, I just kept encountering it. As Jesus is instructing this assembly of people that he's handed this mission over to that are going to be his body, he says, here's what I want you to do for one another. I want you to encourage each other. The definition of encourage is this, to give support, confidence, or hope to. It literally means to cheer for. That you're cheering for. You're giving support and hope and confidence to someone. He says, when you guys get together, what I want you to do, I want you to cheer for each other. Encourage. But then you look at the church, and you look at the way that we've operated, and you have to ask yourself, what happened? Because if Jesus is saying this is what it's supposed to be, and I want to make sure that you understand this, that again, what he's trying to do is not to help us be something that God is not, but again, what do? As the body of Christ, our role is to live out the life of Christ here amongst those that live beside us. But I don't know that we necessarily understand this about God. And there's a passage in 1 Corinthians that's just amazing as it pertains to this. Because in 1 Corinthians, Paul's writing to the church at Corinth, and he's trying to help them on this journey. And as he does, as he comes to chapter 7, he says something to them that I don't think very many of us believe, which may be why we struggle with this idea of encouraging one another. And Paul almost says it flippantly as he's walking through this conversation with them. But he says something that I struggle to believe and that I don't know that I carry with me very often. He says to them, 2 Corinthians 7:6, he says, but God, and listen to how he describes God. Listen to how he characterizes God. But God, who encourages those who are discouraged, encouraged us by the arrival of Titus. He says, but God, the God that we serve, you know, the God who encourages those who are discouraged. How many of you would look at God that way? Tell me about God. If I were to sit down with you and say, listen, tell me about God. Tell me about the God that you serve. How many of you would say, well, he's the God who encourages those who are discouraged? I don't know that we understand this about him. And so as a result, I think inside the church, there's been this twist. Where Jesus says he's instructing the church throughout these early letters, he's saying to them, this is what I want you to do. This is what I want you to be for one another. I want you to encourage one another. I want you to be one another's fans. I want you to cheer for one another. I want you to give support and confidence to one another constantly as you're coming in contact with one another. In the Hebrews 10 passage, he says, don't stop meeting together. Why? Because it's when you meet together, you're able to encourage each other. You're able to give hope and support to one another in this journey. But somewhere along the way, it got twisted. And the way that I usually talk about it pertains to Yankees fans. And I know for some of you, I knew coming into today that me wearing this on stage would basically mean that half of you would just tune me out. I know, you're here and you haven't left yet because you're being polite, but you're not listening to anything that a Yankees fan has to say. Okay, this is my point to be able to connect with you because you'll understand what I'm talking about and appreciate what I'm talking about. When I talk about this, I usually talk about it in terms of Yankees fans because I think what's happened in the church is that somewhere along the way, we became Yankees fans instead of Mets fans. And what I mean by that is this. If you've ever been to a Yankees game, you know this. If you're a Yankees fan, you know this. The Yankees don't actually have fans. They have critics. Right? That's what we are. When I go to a Yankees fan, that's what I am. We are there to let the team know if they're doing a good job or not. Right? And we're not going to cheer before you do anything. You do something for me, and then I will tell you whether it was good enough. I'm not here to support you. I'm here to inform you, and you need me. That's what Yankees fans are. Somewhere along the way, that happened with the Yankees fans. They started off as fans, but somewhere along the way, they became critics. You go to a game, it's a whole stadium full of critics. It's one of the things that makes it really hard to play as a Yankee. Mets fans, on the other hand, have given up long ago that anything good will ever happen on the field. Right? Just totally called them out. And so they just go to cheer. They're hoping that their cheering can actually help the people on the field do something good. They don't know if it'll be successful or not, but they're still hoping. Somewhere along the way inside the church, something twisted. And rather than being fans, we became critics. And we sucked the life out of this thing. Somewhere along the way, we began to believe that our role in each other's lives was to let each other know whether or not we're measuring up. Whether or not it's good enough. Whether or not you've done enough. And we became critics. And we literally sucked the life out of this thing. And along the way, you know what we taught each other? That's who God is as well. You know what we taught each other? We taught each other that God's up there critiquing you rather than cheering for you. God did not send Jesus Christ to the cross so he could critique you. He sent Christ to the cross to pay for everything that's evil and broken about me and you, to pay for all of those moments when we didn't make it, when we didn't live up to it, when we weren't good enough. So that our relationship with him from that day forward would be a relationship of love and encouragement. Where he is cheering for, supporting, building into you and me relentlessly. No one is more passionate. If you get nothing else out of today, get this. No one is more passionate about you becoming who you were created to be than God. No one. you wouldn't even give for yourself what he gave for you. No one is more invested. No one is more invested in you being all that you were created to be than he is. And when he gave his son for you, when Jesus Christ took your place on that cross, it was so that the relationship would forever be changed. You see, Jesus took the criticism. He took the judgment. Romans says that God poured out the wrath of, that the wrath of God was poured out on Christ, so that you would never have to experience it. But somewhere along the way, we've twisted it. And rather than cheering for one another, we began to critique one another. And because of that, we began to believe that that's who God was as well. But Paul says, no, 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 no. God is the one who encourages the discouraged. God's the one who steps in and cheers when you feel like everyone else has stopped. And if there was any doubt of whether or not he was passionate about you, Jesus Christ ended it. Jesus says, here's what I want you to do. I want you to come together. And on this journey, we have all sorts of roles that we play in one another's lives. And we point each other to truth. We point each other to Christ. We point each other to the right direction. But it's not so that you'll know whether or not you're measuring up. It's not because I'm here to critique you. It's because I'm here to invest in you and support you and bring you confidence and hope in every chance I get. Jesus says, this is what I want you to be. This is the beauty of what we're creating. Which I don't know about you, but that excites me. Because I hate being a critic. I hate it. I don't want anything to do with it. It's ugly. It's uncomfortable. It's awful. Jesus says, no, no, no. This is where you get to cheer for each other. But he doesn't just tell us to do it. He also begins to inform us on how to do it. And so he gives us different ways. And I think the first one, to be honest, is the one that we probably think of most naturally. Because most naturally we think about words. And we think about how we can encourage each other with words. And the scriptures teach us this, that this is one of the primary ways that we do get to encourage one another. As a matter of fact, Ephesians chapter 4 talks about this and talks about how everything that we say should be encouraging and building the people up around us. It says, don't use foul or abusive language. Let everything you say be good and helpful so that your words will be an encouragement to those who hear them. I love what Bob Goff says about this as he's talking about words and the power of words and how they can affect those around us. He says, words can launch us. We don't need to be a dean. And in the story, he's talking about how the dean of the law school that he attended kind of launched him with some words that he spoke to him. He says, we don't need to be a dean to say words that can change everything for someone. Instead, God made it so that ordinary people like you and me can launch each other. In fact, I wonder if we can launch people better than a dean because we're ordinary. I believe it's true that the right people can say the right words that change everything. And guess what? We're the ones who get to say them. He says, don't underestimate the power of your words. And how as we step into one another's lives, we can literally launch each other to give support and hope. There's a guy at the Uptown service, his name's Ben. Ben does this in my life all the time. I don't know if he knows that Sunday nights are hard for pastors or what, but he texts me almost every Sunday night to encourage me. Just a couple lines. It's changed my life. It's changed my whole experience of what we do. You have no idea the power of your words. And God says, as you step into one another's lives, even in those moments when you're bringing truth, even in those moments when we have to wrestle together through what it means to follow Christ, he says, let everything that you say, every word that you say, let it be good and helpful, encouraging to those who hear it, to those that you're interacting with. You do it through the words that you say. Not only do you do it through the words that you say, but then also, as you read through the New Testament, you see another way that people are often encouraged, or way that people are encouraging each other. You see it lived out in 1 Corinthians chapter 16, and Paul's talking about this group of people who have been serving alongside of him. And as he comes to the end of it, listen to what he says in verse 18. He says, they have been a wonderful encouragement to me as they have been to you. And he's talking about how they're serving and how they're giving of themselves. And sometimes the way that we encourage through service is that we identify someone who's struggling and we come alongside of them and we do something for them. But in this passage with Paul, it's that he came alongside of them and served with them. And as they're serving with Paul, there's this mutual encouragement on this journey together. For those of you who are on ministry teams, you know what this is like. And you come together, I think even inside this space, when we come together on Sunday mornings after everything's been set up and we're talking about celebrations, and you look around the circle and there's just this incredible encouragement because you look at the people who are serving and giving of their lives alongside of you on this mission, and it's encouraging. You encourage through service. At the beginning of Romans in chapter 1, he talks about how we also encourage, not just with words and service, but then we also encourage with faith. Romans 1, verse 12, he says, when we get together, I want to encourage you in your faith, but I also want to be encouraged by yours. And there's this encouragement that comes when we take steps of faith, and it builds into the faith of those around us that listen, no, God can be trusted, and God is who he says that he is. And as we take those steps of faith, it encourages those around us. This past week, after Hugh spoke, I had the opportunity to drive him to the airport, and we were talking and sharing stories, and he was talking to me about his son, and I was talking about my son, and just some of the struggles that come along with what we do. And as we're talking through that, he said, you know, how are you doing? And I began to tell him two of the stories of the individuals who were baptized last week at the 10:30 service. And I said, when I see them take that step of faith, it just encourages me. Right? Many of you have experienced that. You're at that baptism and you see people take steps of faith. Or you see someone who's willing. You see someone who's willing to step into to impact for the first time. Or someone who opens up in a dinner group and finally begins to share their heart. Trust God that he can impact their life. It's just incredibly encouraging. God says, this is what I want it to be. I want it to be this family of people who are cheering for one another. I want it to be that from the moment that you walk in, you know that you have this incredible cheering section behind you. That they're not there to critique you, but they're there to cheer for you, to encourage and support, to build your confidence and your hope. We get to do that through our words. We get to do that through our service. We get to do that through steps of faith, just constantly encouraging, 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 encouraging. This is the beauty of what he gives us the opportunity to be part of. And for the next couple weeks, and I told you this a couple weeks ago as well, that for the next few weeks, all I'm going to do is just encourage you. We're just going to talk through some beautiful things about what God's done in your life, what God wants to do in your life, the hope that we have to look forward to. What I want to do is I want to be able to build your confidence. I want to be able
to let you see the hope that we have, to support you. And my challenge to you is that as we walk through this, this is going to be the only thing I'm going to challenge you to do. As we walk through this, here's what I want you to do. Just one person a week. I want you to find someone to encourage. Specifically the difficult ones. Because you guys know, like, there are people who are difficult to encourage. And you try to encourage them. You want to encourage them. But you can't remember for the life of you why you're still friends. And you're looking and looking and looking. As a parent, sometimes I experience this. I want to encourage my kids, and I'm looking for something good to say, and I'm like, man, but then there's those days you're like, I got nothing. And there's those people in your life, I got nothing, but to walk into this, and that person in your dinner group that's difficult or whatever it may be, to find someone and say, you know what, this week I'm going to do everything that I can to encourage them, to cheer for them, so that they know that they have a fan this week. The world around us doesn't need another critic. Our lives are filled with critics. Every time we turn around, there's another one. Your friend doesn't need another critic. Your wife doesn't need another critic. Your husband doesn't need another critic. Your boyfriend doesn't need another critic. The world is crying out for someone to believe in them. For someone to cheer for them. That's who we get to be. And in the process, maybe, just maybe, we'll change their perception of who God is. Maybe, just maybe, we can get to the point where they'll look at our God and say, oh, that's the God who encourages the discouraged. But that will only be true if that becomes true of us. May we learn again how to cheer for each other. We knew how to at one point. You don't have to teach kids to cheer. Did you know this? I'm a Yankees fan, so of course it was a high priority for me that my son Caden sees Derek Jeter play before he retires. So I took him to a baseball game. You know what I didn't have to teach him? How to cheer. Everybody start cheering. He'd jump up, start cheering. What are you cheering for, Caden? I have no idea, but I love cheering. We all knew how to at some point, but I'm afraid we've forgotten. But with Jesus Christ, God comes storming into our lives, cheering. Look what I've done for you. Now you can make it. You can make it. We're going to make it. May we become the fans that God intended for us to be in one another's lives. May we learn to cheer. May we learn to cheer loud for one another. Will you pray with me? Father, oh, it's amazing. It's amazing how you do encourage us over and over again. And so often we're so busy with life that we miss it. And Father, I pray that as we move through the next few weeks, that we would become more and more aware of, that our eyes would be open to just all the different ways that you're cheering, that you're encouraging, that you're bringing hope, that you're working to build our confidence in who you've made us to be and the power that you've placed within us. Father, I pray that you would help us to see the truth that you are the one. You're the one who encourages the discouraged. And may we begin to learn how to do that with one another as well. And as a result, may we begin to take one more step in seeing you for who you are. May we begin to bring the truth of who you are to those around us. In Jesus' name, amen.